Hello, my Crystal Loves Texas podcast family. Wow, have we got a show for you tonight. I want to, of course, welcome my trusty co-host, Rebecca Williams.
Hi, did y'all miss me last week?
Yes, we always miss you, Rebecca. And my special guest today, Mr. Larry McKenzie. And Larry has agreed to come on and basically tell his story. A lot of us have heard of that name in the community floating around, Larry McKenzie. But tonight we get to meet the Larry McKenzie. So Larry McKenzie, introduce yourself to us, please.
Greetings.
Hello.
My name is Larry McKenzie. I was born and raised in Houston, Texas. Attended MacArthur Elementary and River Oaks Elementary. And
Lanier, you smart.
Lanier Vanguard. Yes. Yeah, I do okay.
Only smart children attend those schools.
That's okay.
Wanted to fly planes, so I went to Ross Shaw Sterling High School.
Yes.
And after that, I went to Prairie View A&M University.
Woo!
So
we produce productive people.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And after that, I was a medical technologist, board certified, and decided that that wasn't the path that I wanted to take.
Okay.
And became a teacher.
Wow.
And I've been pretty much happy since then.
And that was in 1995.
That was in 1995.
I was in
the fifth grade.
Let me say this. We don't want to hear all that. Let me say this. I want people to really get a good grasp of the background that Larry McKenzie comes from. Larry didn't just fall off the back of a truck and end up being an activist and a spokesperson for the community. Listen to a little bit to Larry's resume. Larry is he attended MacArthur, River Oaks, Lanier, Ross Sterling High School. And he graduated in 1991 from Prairie View A&M University.
Yes.
He's a member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity. And he's affiliated with the Masons. And he has run for many positions around the Houston area. He is an advocate for equitable educational resources, more vocational and CATE training, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math programs. He has been an educator in HISD.
Yes.
In HISD, only district?
Only district.
For 26 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, 95, I guess that's up to 28 years
now. Oh my goodness gracious. Okay, yes, 28 years. Don't trust my math. I'm reading
that math was not math.
I'm reading this resume. Okay. This resume is only a couple of years old, but that's okay. Listen to this list where Larry has been an effective and dedicated teacher. He's taught at Thomas Middle School, Sterling High School, Lawson Middle School, formerly Dowling Middle School, which I taught at Dowling Middle School too, Cullen Middle School, Woodson Middle School, Ryan Middle School, Lamar High School, CEP, High School Ahead Academy, Fonville Middle School, and secondary DAEP.
Absolutely.
So Larry, you...
That sounds like all Title I schools to me, with the exception of one of them.
Yeah. And see, Rebecca is making that distinction in her mind, as I didn't even think, they didn't come up to me, Rebecca, but when you read through that, that's absolutely right. Those are the schools that would be considered the most challenging schools in HISD.
Those are the schools people usually run from.
Absolutely. And you ran into it.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Larry, you have been a member of the Shared Decision-Making Committee at most of these middle schools that you've taught at.
Yes.
And you've been a member of the parent teacher organization at MacArthur Elementary, Cullen Middle School, Yates High School, Mickey Leland College Preparatory School. You're also a coach, a baseball coach, very active with that. And you've coached also at Cullen and Mickey Leland College Prep. Woo. Okay. I had to take a breath after that. That's a long resume, Larry. My resume is not nearly that extensive, but I wanted to read that out because I think that people need to understand exactly what what your experience is.
Yes.
In HISD, and Rebecca, you may be able to attest to this too, but let me just say this for the record. Generally, teachers are not in a teaching position because they have to be.
Oh, no.
Teachers are only there because they want to be. Yeah. It's something that keeps them there. Where most people run from, that's like a firefighter, where most people run away from the fire. Teachers are going to run to the activity.
Yes.
So that's saying what your heart is and where your heart is right now. So, Larry, let me ask you this. Can you tell us a little bit about what made you decide to get started in teaching in the first place?
Honestly, I worked in a laboratory. I worked for LabCorp. And before I worked for LabCorp, I worked for Harris County Hospital District, which is now Harris Health.
Okay.
And
so that's your background in the science and tech. Yes.
That's my background.
Okay.
And I had a bad supervisor.
Got you.
So instead of just putting up with it, I said, you know what? Let me try substitute teaching.
Yeah.
And then I became a substitute. And after I became a substitute, I enjoyed what I was doing.
Yeah.
So it was a calling.
Yeah.
And I took the courses that I needed to be a teacher.
Right.
I've been a teacher ever since then.
Your background sounds a little bit like mine. I went to school for journalism, for broadcast journalism. And that is what my degree is in. However, I started substitute teaching in Pearland, and I found that was something that I really liked. I was drawn to it. So, and my experience was a little bit different, Larry, because, and I know I've told Rebecca this before, I wanted to be anything but a teacher because, and let me tell you why, because I came from a long line of teachers. And back in the day, people used to say this, and you told me your parents said this too, Rebecca. Make sure that when you're in school, go ahead and get your teaching certification,
right,
because you can always have something to fall back on. Yes. Now, when they told me to fall back on it, to me, what that meant is that
if you fail
at everything you really want to do, you can always be a teacher. And that's how, you know, in my 20-year-old, 18-year-old mind, that's what I was hearing. Okay. But I did not realize that there was something in the DNA of my genealogy that teaching was something that was just what we were built for.
Yes.
And then my story is once again similar. My background is in political science. And I did not start off at the classroom. I actually worked for my state representative as soon as I graduated from Prairie View. God rest his soul now. And I had no intentions of going to the classroom. But after he lost his election and he freed me to go work for any politician I wanted to go to when they were calling, I was like, nope, I got to find something else to do.
Yeah.
Because my loyalty at that time was just stuck with him. And I ended up substitute teaching. Now, unlike them, they found a passion for it. I did not. I was like, I hate this.
Wow.
Seriously, I'm just being honest. I was like, I hate this. No. You know, it was just, I'm used to traveling and being at restaurants and going to galas and doing this and this and then having a mundane day from like, I hated that.
Well, my day was never mundane. I can never say that in the classroom, my day. I'm a newly resigned teacher from my district, but I can always say that my day was never mundane. And you can probably attest to that.
But I did find purpose in it. Eventually, it took a while because I was like, no, I need to get out of this profession. But I did eventually find purpose in it.
That's good. And I think that is what connects us all here.
Yeah.
Here today. But Larry, let me ask you this. Now, what is your status with Houston Independent School District right now?
Right now, I am, my work site is home.
Okay.
And I'm going through a termination process.
Okay.
By Houston Independent School District.
Okay.
And I am awaiting the Board of Managers where they'll go ahead and terminate my contract.
Okay.
And the reason why they want to terminate
my contract. Right, that's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, is because they said that I threatened the Board of Managers.
Wow.
And what I did is, and I'm an activist or advocate, whichever one you want to call me.
Okay.
But at the time when I wanted to communicate with the board of managers,
yes,
they didn't have a telephone number.
Right.
They didn't have an email address.
Yes.
So I did what people do these days. And so I Googled their names.
Okay.
And so when I Googled their names, I came up with addresses and I came up with some telephone numbers and I came up with places where they work.
Okay.
So I came and I spoke at the board meeting.
Right.
And I said some names. I said the name of a husband. I said the name of a street. And because yes. I am a parent.
Yes.
And I have kids.
Right.
I said street names without the number.
Right.
To let them know. I said, well, this is what happens when you can't get in touch with people who are supposed to represent you.
Right.
And all of these things are public things.
Public record. Yes.
Public record. I mean, actually Google.
So, yeah. So it's there. It's there.
So what they did is they said that I threatened them. And it wasn't a threat. It was what it was. And so now they're putting me through the termination process.
Okay. Okay. So I just wanted everybody to kind of have an idea of kind of how we got to this place. Yes. Now, Larry, let me ask you this. Throughout the years, you've witnessed changes in the state of education here in Houston, for sure.
Yes.
Throughout, from the time that I was in school and you're a little bit behind me, that you were in school, certainly when Rebecca was in school. And I know that when I started in HISD and from the time from the last at least 15 years, I've seen a lot of things change.
Yes.
Okay. Now, when did you begin to see a definitive shift in student success rates as it relates to systemic failures in our educational system, especially HISD? Because for you to go to the extent that you did to reach out to these representatives,
yes,
there had to be some things that were weighing on you pretty heavily. What were some of those things weighing on you?
Well, realize that I began this pathway with because my son's school was closed.
And what school was that?
And that was MacArthur Elementary.
Right.
And this was in 2005. And I've
yes.
been speaking with the state reps, Boris Miles, the board trustee, which was Paula Harris at the time. And
yes.
they told me that it wasn't supposed to be on the list.
Okay.
So when I found out that that's what was going on, I reached out to my city council person. I reached out to everyone. And I started sending emails and I started attending the town hall meetings. I started going to everything that I could do.
Right.
So that I can gain information on what I'm supposed to do.
Exactly.
And when I came up with nothing, then I began running for offices. City
okay.
council person, board trustee.
Okay.
State Board of Education. And attending everything in the community so that I would know exactly what's going on.
Right.
So that's what started me and that's what pushed me to the point where I made it my business to know what to do so
right.
that when another parent asks me, I can tell them what they should do and how they should do it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me ask you this. It's interesting because what was the reason or were you ever given a reason as to why those certain schools were slated to be closed? Was it a decline in enrollment? Was it test scores? Did they ever tell you what the reason was?
No, at that time, they didn't tell me. They just put the school on a list. But then
wow.
they, as they grew and realized between 1998 and 2012, there were 78 schools that had been closed. So they created
wow.
the reason of enrollment numbers.
Yes.
And 73 out of those 78 schools were in District 2, which is the North District, and District 4, which is the South District,
okay.
with Yates and Cullen and Woodson. And all of that's the majority Black community and Hispanic community.
Right.
So when then they had a moratorium in 2012 on closure of schools, but they've
yeah.
gone back to closing schools or making them special schools where they could split a school or consolidate a school. So the fight is still there.
Okay.
Okay, so you have been very much at the forefront of advocating for teachers' input and parent involvement in the educational process. Tell me how you found yourself in a position being placed on involuntary leave by HISD, and what were the circumstances?
Well, like I said before, I said some spouses' names and I said some street names. And so they took it as a threat.
Okay. Okay.
And because I'd already always been present and doing my due diligence as a community liaison or advocate or activist, whichever one you want to call me at that time, they decided that they were going to fire me.
Oh.
Now, the thing is they decided it, but my contract only went to June 2nd, and everything that occurred happened June 15th. But since Miles had been hired by TEA, and the board of managers had been hired by TEA, and then the hearing officer was hired by TEA.
Yeah, I found that was, that was a little
so it wasn't something that was going to be fair any kind of way.
Okay.
So I understood what I was doing. I understood that I was on my way to being terminated.
Right.
Because there was no one there that was for me or objective.
Okay, and, well, let me ask you this. This is just, and this begs to be asked. Were you ever called in, even privately, to meet with this group to see what your concerns were, or if there was any clear and present danger that you were presenting?
No, I was never called in. And if you realize, when I was speaking, I was in a what do they call the rooms? I was in an overflow room.
Okay.
So the board of managers were in the other room over 100 feet away.
The meeting room.
The meeting room, right.
Okay. There.
So if I wanted to do something,
yes,
I couldn't do anything. And I was never, as many meetings that I've been to, I've never put anyone in danger, because I don't want them to put me in danger.
Right. Right.
And also, I watched that meeting online. Yes. I was not there at that particular one.
Right.
And I didn't even take it as that. I took away from it, and you can tell me if I was wrong, because I agree with what you did. I'm sorry, I did.
Okay.
But I took it as you were saying that I don't understand why you guys are even on the board, because none of you have children in this area. None of you have children. And not only I took away from that, a lot of people who was watching it also took that away. Like, you don't have children in this area. You don't have any interest in this area. So how are you able to have this kind of authority when you don't have any investment, you don't have any entitlements, you don't have anything in this area? So that's how a lot of people, I'm glad you clarified it, but that's how a lot of people.
Yeah, I was really, I was railroaded, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And what was written was that I threatened, or I provided the information on where one of the board of managers' kids took karate. Now, yes, I did do that, but they took karate in 2012.
Oh, wow.
I was taking karate there. And my son was taking karate there.
Oh, at the same place. So you
knew
that.
At the same place. So I had knowledge.
Yes.
That's what I said. You know what? I remember you.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah. And like, yeah, at Sacarambo. And Sacarambo's been closed.
Okay.
So that's right. Their children are grown now. And it's amazing how far the superintendent would go just to get rid of someone who speaks out.
A squeaky wheel.
Hey, telling the truth.
Well, let me ask you this. Speaking of speaking out, Larry, how do you feel that our elected officials have handled the district takeover in terms of visibility and helping their constituents understand what's going on and where their power lies? Now, I've seen, I'm not going to call any names, but I've seen two. One was here on our show, who actually spoke out about what their feelings were, and the access that their constituents had to this, and what the constituents' rights were. But in addition to that, there's another representative who's on the state level, who's out, not in this county, but another county, who's been very in the forefront of making sure that the voice, their voice is heard when it comes to their opinion about what's going on in HISD. How do you feel that our elected officials have done in terms of that?
I will
tread lightly.
Oh, I don't tread lightly. I'll tell the truth.
Yeah.
And the truth is,
I've only heard of two. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it's actually a couple of more. Okay. That.
Now, as far as the meetings that I've attended, mm-hmm. and I've been attending meetings since 2005.
Yes.
And as far as since Mike Miles has been here, mm-hmm. people that have reached out to teachers and reached out to me and said anything.
Yes.
My own state rep.
Yes.
I sent her a text.
Yes.
And she said, I don't have anything to do with education.
Okay.
And that's Sean Theory.
Okay.
So I spoke with Jolanda Jones, and she actually had several meetings.
Right.
That yes. dealt
I've been
with
at
it.
A few of them.
And one gentleman that's been there is Ron Reynolds. Mm-hmm. Now, he voted for the law, but he's been trying to counteract the law since then.
Well, let's be clear on this. I think that a lot of people who may have voted for a change to take place had no idea exactly what was involved in that, because it was not spelled out or it wasn't unwrapped to them. I think all of us may have been a little bit blindsided by what we actually got.
But there's one rep,
yeah,
who you know I can't stand, who wrote the bill and has yet.
That's Harold Dutton. I don't have a political office.
I was trying.
Yeah, I said it. The best thing is to tell the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. And who wrote the bill? Whose constituents have been begging that particular representative to come out
and
refuses, not answering phone calls, not answering emails, not answering anything, and their constituents want answers because in his district, the 28 schools were taken over.
That's wow. right. That's right. Wow. Elementary, middle school, and high schools. So those are the NES schools, and I say that.
And were you in an NES school? What school did you?
No,
you,
I was. I was at the moment. I was at secondary DAD.
Gotcha.
Which
gotcha.
Is a discipline school.
Gotcha.
And all of the good children are sent to secondary DAD.
Okay, gotcha.
So, but yeah,
sweet angel, precious.
Body. Yeah, that's it. So, but the thing is and people that are running, and Sheila Jackson Lee has shown up, and she's also checked with the DOJ, and she's actually sent me some stuff to let me know that she's working on it.
Right
now, and I've heard some advertisements to be the mayor about people who say, "Hey, I want to be mayor. I'm in with the HISD takeover." I forgot his name. The number one guy that's running against Sheila G in the runoff,
John Whitmire.
Yeah,
John Whitmire has not been there. He was a senator that voted right. for it.
The dean and, of the Senate. Let's
and,
be clear.
And right. And the thing is, look, when you send people to Austin, their job is to read what they learned, read what's there.
Right.
Understand it,
yes,
and bring it back to the people that they represent.
Right.
So for all the people that voted for it and didn't read it, shame on you.
Yeah.
But the thing you do is after you make a mistake,
yeah,
you go back and you make up for that mistake.
Right. That's right.
So I understand that. Okay, you made a mistake. We're all human. But what are you doing
to rectify that mistake?
To rectify that mistake. So that's my whole thing. And I don't expect people to be perfect because I'm not perfect.
Right.
And I didn't get in this because people were perfect. I got into it because people were making mistakes and they weren't communicating with the communities that they represented.
Yes. And Larry, tell me, reiterate again about some of the offices that you have run for. And do you have aspirations to run for any other political offices here in Houston?
You know what? I have run for city councilman.
Okay.
I think two or three times. I've run for HISD Board of Trustees.
Okay.
Two or three times. I have been a precinct chair in 2008 when Barack Obama became president.
Okay.
And I have run for a state board of education. And I'm not going to lie to you. I'm sitting up here and I'm looking at the people who might run for Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee's spot after she, if she wins for mayor. And these people, they haven't shown up. They haven't said anything about HISD takeover.
Yeah.
And if you haven't said anything for me, you're not an option. Because the people that we're hurting the most are not the teachers, but the students. We are the most stable people. Teachers have to be fair, firm, and consistent.
Right.
So we're the most consistent people in some of the lives of the students that are in at-risk communities.
Oh, my goodness. We are probably the most consistent people in many of the lives of the students who are in the at-risk communities. And, you know, when I hear anyone say, and this is on any level, when I hear anyone say that it's not the teacher's job to be the mother, or not the teacher's job to be the nurturer, or not the teacher's job to be the consoler of these students, I shake my head, because although it may not be what is on the job description,
that's right,
it is what we become every day when we go in there. And if it had not been for us being in many of those positions, many of those kids would have had an even more difficult time.
Okay, so
matriculating.
Now I'm gonna play devil's advocate.
Yes,
because I've always said, and I always believe to my soul, it's not teachers' job to solve the ills of society.
No,
and I feel like because of government and people we put in place, they have passed the buck for teachers to deal with. So let me give you an example of what I'm saying. Kids don't have food. We'll put that in the school. Kids don't have clothes. We'll put that on the school. Kids don't have supplies. We'll put that on the school. Okay. Families need this. Oh, what if they send their children? We'll put that on the school. So my point is that I feel like politicians and and not just politicians, anybody affiliated with the government have passed the buck onto schools and society to circumvent what they're supposed to do. They can handle that. That's their problem. That's their issue. Well, we'll do this instead of you being who requests my vote every 2 to 4 to 6 years. Instead of you handling that.
Well, now I am going to be the devil's advocate, Rebecca, Larry. This is where I am on that. Now, I ran for an elected office at one time. I ran for an elected office at one time, and this is how I feel on that. If you are representing people, then you need to be the one who is at the meetings. You need to be the one that's out there at the park. You need to be the one that's out there at the church. You need to be the one that is on social media. You need to be the one with your door open so that if people need to get to you, they can get to you. You need to be the one. If you don't have the energy or the inclination to be in these places, then maybe it's not your place to be in that position. You need to be accessible.
Well, you know what? I'm glad that I'm with you ladies, because I'm going to say it in a softer and kinder way.
Oh, is he really? Because you never get the soft kind, Larry. I'm just saying.
I know. Well,
I'm just going to say that.
Oftentimes, you have people that you have to send someone. They can't do everything.
Right.
You have to send someone that represents you.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And everything you just said.
Yes.
It would seem to me that those people who have been in, I have a friend that called them elected employees.
Yes.
That
they
would hire people who they ran against, people who are actually in the community.
Yeah.
Now, if you're in my area, I stay by Scott and OST.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for free.
Right.
Since 2005.
Yeah.
Why not hire a Larry McKenzie? Because I already have contact with the people that are in my community.
Right.
Why not hire somebody who is already out there?
Yeah.
But you bring in people who don't know what's going on and you just want the loyalty. But you have to create that system so that no matter what happens, the people in that community are always represented.
And you know what, Larry? You know, I would tell Rebecca this. Rebecca was my campaign manager. Mm. But I would tell Rebecca this. I say, Rebecca, you know what? I'm going to do what I know is the right thing to do, regardless. And if people don't like me for that, then vote me out. That's okay. And she stuck by that in public and in private. That's right. Because you need to have the interest of the people that you're representing at heart. And when it comes to issues that are very much paramount issues that are facing people real time, you need to be vocal every chance you get. You need to be at a meeting every chance you get. You need to let people know that I'm standing with you.
Amen.
I mean, right. that's just where I am on that. And like I said, I've seen some people do that, but every time there is an opportunity to do that, that's the thing that needs to be done. Period.
But then you have to check the reason why you run in the first place.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. Mm.
So you have a heart for people. I will campaign manager for Crystal from now to kingdom come. I don't care how many elections she win, lose, or draw, because I know her heart. She has a heart for people. She has a heart for a community. She has a heart for elderly people, children. Crystal just has a big, beautiful heart. And if she can help any and everybody, and sometimes I had to tell her, girl, pull back. We're not doing this. And she'd be like, Rebecca, we have to. No, we don't. But then that goes back to why do you run? Some people that run for office, a lot of them don't run for the right reason. That's and right. I don't care what party they're a part of.
And, you know, it's funny because Rebecca used to tell me this. Then we I don't want to get sidetracked, but Rebecca used to tell me this. And she was, you know, she was just the little, you know, how you have the two angels sitting on your opposite shoulders, a little devil and an angel. She would be. I'm not going to say which one she was. It just depends. It depends on where you stand. But she would say, Crystal, we need to go to this dinner, to this gala, to this formal. And I'm like, that's not really me, but I know that it's important to do that. I would much rather go to the park, help people wash the cars, go and to the nursing home, help people do. You know, I'm just
which I wasn't been, opposed yeah. to that either, but I told her she needed a balance.
Yeah, she said I needed a balance, but let me put this in front of you, Larry.
Okay.
Now, what can you see as the future? Let's look at HISD 5 years from now from your perspective.
Okay.
What can you see as the future of the district? Can we as educators agree that something definitely needed to change in the accountability of student outcomes with HISD? If you had the power, how would you like to have seen this change facilitated? I was at Dowling Middle School in 2008 through 2007 through 2010.
Okay.
And I saw the school shift from where it was a failing school to it came up to where it was a passing school, you know, under the principal that we were under in that year. And it was on the list. This is what they used to call just reconstituting a school.
Absolutely. Okay.
It was on that list to be reconstituted. So regardless of what was done in that year, it was on the list to be reconstituted. So it was reconstituted. But I saw the improvements that were made under a certain administration, you know, within that school. I will say this, HISD had been in a floundering position for a long time. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I don't think anybody who sat in that classroom would not attest to that. Something needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
How would you like to have seen that that change take place in comparison to what we are seeing now? Would you like to have seen something different happen? And then I'll tell you my opinion.
Okay. You have to look at the history of HISD.
100 years this year, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
The history is this. First, they decentralized HISD and gave the principals most of the power. The principals, the older or the more mature principals, stayed at the schools like Lamar and Westside and everything else.
Yes.
Then they lobbied the legislature, Texas legislature, to change the rules so that you could become a principal without having classroom experience.
Wow.
And this was in 2007 and 2008.
I had no idea.
Okay.
What? Yeah. So before we had been working where you had to be a teacher for 3 to 5 years. You had to be an AP for 3 to 5 years.
And right. You worked your way up the ladder. Yes.
Yeah, yes. But no, it wasn't like that. So what they did is they changed the leadership in the communities where they wanted to affect the property values in real estate.
Yeah, that makes
gentrification.
Sense.
Okay. So what you do is you put inexperienced principals in those areas.
Uh-huh.
And then what happens is parents send their kids to schools that are doing well. And the schools that are doing well are the schools that have experienced principals.
Right.
Now, this is all of while it's going on.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yes.
So then they came with the Haberman process to push away some of the teachers that wanted to be principals and say, hey, this test says that you can't be a principal. So you can stay an AP, but you can't be a principal. And those were, those were the stakeholders.
Now, what was that called? The Haberman test?
Haberman process.
Wow.
And it was a test.
Oh, wow.
So what happens is you have all of these inexperienced principals that don't know how to deal. Say if there's an inexperienced principal that's 34 and then they come in and they're dealing with a teacher that is, say, 54 like myself.
Right.
And I've been around HISD and I'm actually trying to help them do whatever they want to do.
Help simplify what they're doing. Yes.
But they're being told, hey, you know, get rid of all the older people.
Wow.
And deal with the younger people and realize in 2009, I think, who was that? Saavedra came in
yes.
and he got rid of 600 teachers. And then, no, that was
Greer.
Right.
Was it
no,
Greer?
No, Greer came in and got rid of 1,100 teachers and principals. And most of those were black and brown teachers and older teachers and principals.
When you say got rid of, what do you mean? They were asked to leave or they were when you say got rid of, tell me what you mean.
They were given better options. What are the acronym for reduction of force. So and all those they weren't hired back and those positions were closed and
RIF.
RIF, that's it, reduction in force. And at the same time they had contracts with Teach for America. So they brought in a lot of students, a lot of teachers that they had the content. I mean, they had all the enthusiasm in the world, but those teachers were placed in at-risk communities, brown and black.
Yeah, and where you need the experienced teachers.
Where you need an experienced teacher and you needed that stability so that when they come in and they're approached with a different type of behavior, they don't take it personal. They know that it was a system that was created for the students that live in this community.
Yes.
All right. Now, if we were really trying to evaluate our kids, we would evaluate them with norm-based testing instead of objective-based testing, which is STAR.
Right.
We would use something like Stanford 9 or what we used to use, which was our test-based.
Yeah,
I remember taking Iowa.
Yes.
So
all the way up into middle school.
But
tell me the difference in the two.
Okay. Objective-based is where they take an objective and they grade you on that objective as per the students that are in the state of Texas.
Okay.
Okay. Norm is like the SAT and the ACT. And those are across
broad-based. Yes.
Broad-based. So
yes.
That's how they're taught.
Okay.
And then realize that if it's just Texas, then the vendors that created the test can get the monies from those tests, which is I think like $7 to $8 million a year.
Oh, now it's STAR is $74 million.
So,
$74 million.
These are old numbers.
So what you're saying is that everything when it came to student accountability, student success, had an economic
string
ulterior motive tied to
absolutely
it.
and it's been that way and it's still that way.
Larry, you fed me a mouthful here. I didn't even realize some of that. Now based on what you are saying, can you How can we, is there any way to upright the ship right now?
Well, and I wasn't a fan of the previous superintendent, but he was trying. And what he did is he made it where it wasn't the pressure. He created everything in the beginning.
Yes.
And allowed teachers to teach into the framework that had been presented.
Okay.
And most of the teachers are a curriculum specialist, had already been here.
Right.
And they wanted to do that initially.
Right.
And it, you have to be here to know who's doing what and how they're doing it.
Exactly.
And so that he was working, he was doing well.
Now you said you were not a fan of his. Now, you know, as a classroom teacher, based on what I'm seeing now, you are probably able to look at something from much more objective glasses because you're looking at it from many perspectives.
Right.
But I'm simply looking at it from that of a classroom teacher. It seemed like that the rapport that he had with the teachers was good. That he had to, he was stern, but he seemed like he tried to foster a rapport with the staff.
Right.
Some type of rapport with the staff.
He didn't have a choice. I mean, you realize that we went from Greer to Lathan, and Lathan came in with Greer, and then she had to learn that there were a lot of people out there that were going to stab in her back, and she was interim superintendent. Mm-hmm. I've always advocated that they do a year by year like they do teachers.
Yeah.
And she get a year by year contract.
Right.
So that she can get the advantages that superintendents get. But I think she didn't get that because of the melanin in her skin. So
I don't think that at all. But that's just me.
And then after she left, we brought one guy in who was just trying to pad his resume because he knew he was going to New York.
Yeah.
That hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
Because I liked him a lot.
The thing about it is, you stay in a house. Well, here it is. You stay in an apartment. Say your apartment is on the third floor.
Mm-hmm.
And you're about to move. You say, Larry, I need somebody to help me move my apartment. I'm going to have to bring three guys with me.
Right.
So that I can navigate the stairs or whatever to move your apartment.
Right.
He only brought one person with him.
So he knew from the, he knew
what he was doing in the beginning. He was a nice guy. I mean,
I think he would have been the best fit for HISD.
But you can't be nice when you're talking about my kids.
Yeah.
And I had boys in HISD. So then when he left, you know, we had, when House came, he was better than them.
Okay.
And he was learning what the position offers and what it really entails when he's doing the job.
And the thing about it is, now this is the air that I got from him. I am going to, and this is, I think this is always, it's always smart. I'm going to read the room first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read the room, because if you know how to read the room, you know exactly how to deal with each aspect of what's going on in the room. But if you come in and you don't read the room and you just start shooting the paintballs out, they may go anywhere. And then you have a situation where it can be very chaotic.
He came like that and then he got better.
Yeah.
And he actually helped me. A parent reached out to me that was in the South Union area.
Uh-huh.
And the child wasn't going to school.
Okay.
And it was an 8-year-old child.
Wow. That's
so
scary.
Yeah, I sent him an email. I got to be able to send an email.
Right, right.
I got to be able to send an email. And I sent him an email.
And he responded.
And he responded and he said, okay, we're going to work with it. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
We'll take it from here. I said, well, and I sent him an email back saying, if you're not going to do anything, let me know. But if you're going to do something, then you got it.
Right.
And he said, I'm going to take care of it.
Wow.
Now, I may not have been a fan of his.
Now, what would make you a fan of a superintendent? What would a superintendent have to do for you to be a fan of this?
I like Carranza.
See? Well, you is.
Or that's not your job to be a fan. Your job is simply to make sure that they're doing their job.
Well, in actuality, that's part of my job. But as far as being a fan, you would have to reach out to people that are already there And you can't do what everyone wants because you'll never get a chance to do things exactly that need to be done.
That's right.
But I'm not a fan, but I worked for him and I respected him as a man.
Okay, now that goes a long way.
Yeah, no, that's
that
right.
That goes
that's
a long
right
way.
You know what? I I'm his house. Come back. No, but one thing that I took away from House, like, he treated teachers fairly at the end of the day. I don't care how frustrated we were, how mad we were, how upset we were, we didn't like the changes. He helped navigate us through that.
He was more objective.
Yeah. And he was like, look, I can't do what everybody wants. And he said it, you know,
no, that's right.
I can't do what everybody wants, but I can promise that I can help y'all get through it in such a way. So it was a reassuring thing. Like, I'm going to work with you. I'm not your enemy, but I'm going to work with
and
you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you all this. And I know that a lot of teachers have spoken to this. I've spoken to this myself, and I don't think that it is that I am way off base. I remember when I was in school, Larry, and I know when you were in school and when you were in school too, Rebecca, that sometimes a principal may have been a principal at that school for the last 20 years mm-hmm. or 15 years.
My principal
and
was.
That principal helps to build the culture of that school.
That's right.
Shout out to Mr. Evans.
And when you, and like you said, because of that, that's when you have schools that can really get a footing
right.
and begin to grow and begin to be successful. But I noticed, I'm going to say this was, wow. You can probably speak more precisely on this than I can, but I'm going to say maybe in the early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
they started bringing those principals in to schools and they would keep them there a year, maybe two, and they were gone. And that was the modus operandi.
That was the formula for reconstitution.
And the thing about it is that is a recipe for not having a successful situation.
That's right.
And I came from a school 2 years ago, and it's a school that Rebecca works at, that has teachers who have been there for 30 years,
yeah,
35 years. And these are multiple teachers. I went into a situation where the average tenure for a teacher there, average was 5 years, and that's a long time. And it was a very different situation. But the principal that was there prior to me leaving the school that I was at, and the only reason that I left is because I bought a house in the neighborhood where the new school was that I taught. That was the only reason that I left. But the principal who was there had been there 8 years before she was reassigned. And she was building the culture of her school. But when you come from a school where you see the people who have been there, one of the gentlemen who, and Rebecca and I know, he was a teaching partner of mine in the eighth grade. This was a gentleman that constantly was in the community making relationships within that community so that we were able to reach out to people if we needed. I remember 3 years ago, there were community partners that sponsored that entire prom, and it was wonderful. And they embraced that school. We got a mural on our school, due to some of these partnerships that people had forged.
And to hear him say out of his own mouth that it is a possibility that he will not be back after this year, we were stunned.
Well, we hope that won't be the case.
We were stunned.
But, you know, from where we stand right now, Larry, from where we stand right now, and I think that, you know, I wanted people to get a chance to hear your story
mm-hmm.
and to be able to connect with you on a way, because, you know, not only can people connect with you from the standpoint of another teacher, but of a citizen, a lifelong Houston citizen,
yes,
but of a parent whose kids have gone through HISD and successfully,
So
Larry, add. I have a question. Your kids are grown now. They're in college. You had pretty much a successful career. You're not done by a long shot.
Nope. Yeah.
Why do you do it? Because most people would say, now your children grown, you're age now. Like, why?
You can retire if you wanted to.
Yeah. Why stay in the fight
and fight the fight?
Because now it makes no sense. I could see if your children was in the fight. They're not. They're grown. They're doing wonderful.
Wow, we've got some excellent comments here too, and I'm going to address these in a second. But so, yes,
why be in the fight?
Still? Who have I mentored to continue to fight? Who have I help to fight their own fight? I live in a community. I live by Cullen Middle School.
Right.
Okay.
South Union.
South Union.
Yeah.
Yellowstone, right. Scott Terrace, Foster Place. Right. I live over there.
Okay.
And the thing is I still see, now I see the children of my children that I taught at Cullen.
Right.
And they call me and they say, Mr. McKenzie, I'm having problems doing this.
Right.
And the thing is if I'm not prepared, you know, those that prepare for war are prepared for peace. I forgot how
that
quote goes.
Yeah. That's right. You said it right.
So if they know how to reach out and be good citizens,
yes.
So you want your child, you want your nieces, your nephews to
be a good citizen. That's right.
Citizens.
That's right.
So now I have adopted half of my community.
Yes.
And they know that, you know what, if I ask Mr. McKenzie, he'll tell me what's going on for real.
Yeah.
And so the thing is I have to stay there. I may not be as loud and as boisterous as they would call me.
Yeah.
But I know that I'm still have my ear to the ground and I know what's going on.
Right.
And I can help the people that are in my community.
That is awesome. Let's address some of these questions and comments that people have, Larry, because they have been on here. Arian says, teaching is not for the faint of heart. Hallelujah, Arian. Much respect for your efforts in the district. That's off awesome. She says they must be held accountable for what they are doing to our children. Yes, people who are in power now and in the past, they have got to be held accountable. Christian says, Arian McCurry, my frat brother is always on point. So somebody has been listening to you, Larry. Somebody knows. Yeah. they know that you have been on the grind. He definitely seems to be about his business. Yes. You are not just a person who has just jumped up out of the cornfield and is running around crazy.
Right.
You know your stuff and you have the receipts to prove it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Kim, that's my sister. Kim says, if a politician is simply in office to take up space until they die, it's time to go. You're right, Kim. You're right. And Arian says, absolutely. Kim says, can Larry address the fact that some principals opted schools into NESA without teachers' consent, even to the point of falsifying records? Woo!
Yeah,
that's the case.
That's easy. And, and you have to realize that principals are human too, and they got bills to pay. And they were threatened. They're at-will employees. So they can be fired in 5 minutes.
Wow.
And then they got the bills that come with the principal paycheck.
Right.
So what happened is he threatened them. And he made them sign, you know, at first he didn't make them sign non-disclosure agreements until he found out that some principals were talking.
Yeah.
So brought them back, signed this, and now you can't say anything otherwise, because now we'll sue you and fire you.
Okay.
Now see that's new.
Well, let me touch on one more thing that Kim said, and then I'm going to speak to that for a second. No one would expect, and this is a good point she's making, no one would expect a CEO of a company to only stay a year before being reassigned. Why should schools not be held in the same regard? It seems to be a self-fulfilling prophecy to destroy HISD schools. Interesting. Very, very interesting, Kim. Now, let me go back and speak to this. You said non-disclosure agreements and all this type of thing. Here is my position, and you all correct me if I'm wrong. Now, for teachers, it's not It's not wisdom. I don't believe it's wisdom. And this is speaking to anyone in any district that this applies to. You cannot use a corporate structure with educators like you would corporate employees. Number one, this is why. Because educators, as it stands in America right now, educators are a commodity.
Right.
Okay. And they have choices.
Well, okay. You know, people don't think that.
Well, but what I'm saying is that, you know, when you come in and you take a hard line, and this is anyone, and you take a hard line and it is a my way or the highway mentality, then many times educators are going to say it's the highway because I've got another offer over here. Now, many times in corporate America, you can't do that because you have people who are jockeying for positions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the whole, you know, that dynamic is completely the opposite of that in education.
Yes.
And again, the second part of that is that teachers are not really the ones that you can lure with high, high salaries because they do it without high salaries anyway.
That's right.
Okay. So, you know, the position of looking at it like a corporate structure, I think that's one that's going to have to be reexamined.
Well,
because teachers are not operating in the same way that corporate people are operating.
Well, I do agree with that, and I've said that a million times over. Simply, I never looked at it from that framework,
mm-hmm.
but because I say, you know, in corporate, you're dealing with adults, and in education, you're dealing with children.
Well, no, so, I mean, not before you even get to the children aspect of it.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's why I said I've never looked at it in that framework before. But some people feel like we ain't needed at all anyway, anymore, anyway, simply because of the development of AI. And because of AI and the things that AI capabilities will have in the future once it's perfected. And I've heard politicians say that, and I've heard my superintendent say this, well, that y'all won't be needed in 20 years anyway.
Well, you know what? I'll put it like this. There's a certain electric car company that is out right now that's paying billions of dollars in suits because it was stated that you didn't need anybody to drive this car.
That's right.
But the car is running off the road and catching on fire on its own and all kinds of stuff. But what we can affirmatively say is that the human interaction is a part that is going to be necessary. When a student comes in and they haven't eaten, and they will they go up to the robot and say, do you have something that I can eat? Robot, may I please borrow a dollar so that I can get a snack out of the machine? Robot, may I please, do you have, I don't have a toothbrush. Do you have an extra, you know, a disposable tooth? These kind of things. You know, there's a human element that comes in the classroom that people don't even realize that we deal with on a daily basis. And like I said, when we first started, the teachers are there because they choose to be there. And that's why you have a shortage of teachers. Fewer and fewer people are choosing to do that. So you know the ones that are in that classroom are in that classroom because they want to be there. And there is a shortage of teachers, people who, it's not a shortage of robots. Let me say that, because you can go right now and they're stacked up at Fry's and what's the name of the other place over? Yeah, and Best Buy. So, but you know, who's going to go plug that robot in? Well, who's going to plug that AI in? Who's going to set the program for it? So you cannot take that human element out of it. I think that's not accurate. Yes, yes, Larry, I'm going to give you the last word. Yes.
Well, education, it deals with, for teachers, what we do is we try to create lifelong learners.
Absolutely.
And my thing is as long as you're learning, that means you're alive.
That's right. That's right.
Realize that I'm a science teacher.
Yes.
So in the best of situations, nature does asexual reproduction when there's no threat to life.
Right.
But then when there's a threat to life and there's changing environment, there's sexual reproduction. Yes. So that whatever organism it is, it can adjust
right
to that environment.
Right.
And you speak about the CEOs and all that other stuff. You have to realize that the gentleman that's the superintendent, Floyd Mike Miles, is not even certified to teach.
Of course.
So
wait, he's not a certified superintendent.
No, he's not certified in the state of Texas. Go look on certification.
Right. But
look
he up. Is certified to teach, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's just like when you when you're about to lose your certification, they send you an email
to renew it.
To renew it.
Yeah.
Y'all know it. Know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
His hadn't been renewed. He's not certified to teach. He's not certified to be a principal.
Wow.
So he wouldn't care about a certification. And I'll go back to what I was saying, you know, being a science teacher, even at the amino acid level, you have what's called a waggle. And that compensates for the changes that come in. And that's what teachers are. We compensate for the changes that happen in the lives of the students.
Yes.
And what's happening
exactly.
Is,
I like the way you put that.
And they are hurting the students. And realize that our representatives not only represent those that can vote, the 18 plus, but they're also representing the children and the babies from 1 to 18. Yes. And then from 18 to 108.
That's right.
So everything you just said is that corporate
model
structure or model, can't be applied because we're dealing with humans.
Right.
That's my point.
Right.
So, and we have to continue to do that. And for all those people that are candidates and all of that stuff, if you're not talking about the HISD takeover or some type of solution for it, then you are not an option.
And that's going to filter completely outside of this district. Just this district and the city of Houston. That has got to present itself on a statewide level when it comes to polling time and voting.
Absolutely.
My last question, and I'm done with the questioning. Do you think Houston Independent Schools District has the longevity to withstand the next 5-10 years?
Next 5 to 10 years, yes, because realize that all of that stuff was changed because Houston and Harris County is a blue county, and we have a governor that is red, and we have the systems that are red and all that other stuff. But there are still people that are present and they're just quiet. They're not saying anything. And when he leaves, remember what he's doing is he's forcing it, his point on what's happening in HISD. Mm-hmm. But the good people will come back.
Right.
And the principals that
you
are
think them, like me.
Yeah, I can't help
it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Because I'm in the system.
That's right. Yeah.
And even if I'm not in the system, even if I don't work for HISD anymore, I still live here.
That's right.
And so
and you care about the city. You care about the schools.
I don't have to be hired to offer up my suggestions. I don't have to be hired to put the work in. I've been an activist and an advocate without being paid for it. So that's not going to stop just because. Then when he's gone, we'll fix it back. And hopefully we'll fix it where it can't happen like that again.
And you heard it here first, Larry McKenzie. Now, Larry, if viewers would like to contact you with about your experience, what your experience has been, or to invite you to be a part of an ongoing community discussion about education in the Houston area, how would they do so? How do they reach out to you? Facebook, right?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Yes. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I'm actually on Snapchat. I'm on X, which used to be called
the
Twitter.
Social media.
All you have to do
they banned me from Twitter.
If you Google me, and I'll challenge anyone that if you haven't been trying to reach out to me before now, please go ahead and, you know, everyone can change. You can't judge a person for their activism or their advocacies.
Right.
So if you want some suggestions, please Google my name.
Yes.
It's Larry dot McKenzie, McKinzie, at sbcglobal.net. Yeah, that's an old.
That's what I said. Your name hasn't changed. Your email, sir.
My mother is the only other person I know who has an sbcglobal.net email. Yes.
So, yeah, but the thing is if you really want to help, don't vote for people that are haven't said anything.
Yeah.
And
say something. And, say something.
Say something. Vote for somebody. Do something. You if you're doing nothing, then you're
part of the problem.
That's right. That's that was easy. You're part of the problem.
Well, Larry McKenzie, I want to thank you so much for coming. And like I said, Larry McKenzie, his opinions are his own, and they don't necessarily represent the opinions of the Crystal Loves Texas podcast, but they may, and then they may not. But we wanted him to come on here, and we wanted him to be able to share his perspective and for you to get to know him, so that when you are hearing things out in the media, when you are listening, when you were reading things, you know who this person is and you know exactly what his fight has been about. Rebecca?
Okay, I have to do this. He's gonna kill me later. I don't care. This week is Omega Sci-Fi's Founders Week.
Founders Day on Friday.
So I am sending a big, huge shout out to the brothers of Omega Sci-Fi Fraternity Incorporated. And I want to thank Larry for sharing his week with us, because I know the bros have a lot going on this week. So I just want to thank him for taking the time out to come and just shed a little light on what's going on. But big shout out to Omega Sci-Fi. I hope you enjoy your weekend, fellas.
And Kim said, I have a couple more comments. Xavier Williams says, what's up, Larry McKenzie? That's my best friend in the world. Yeah.
What's going on, X?
Okay. And Kim says she wants to shout out to Councilmember Shabazz for speaking up for HISD teachers. When she came on here, she spoke up for HISD teachers.
Oh, we were in a 45-minute conversation.
Yeah, yeah. She definitely spoke up for teachers, being a former educator herself. But if you need to contact Larry, if you want to reach out to him, you know how you can reach out to him.
Facebook
works. And we are going to make sure that we get this podcast up on YouTube as well as Facebook, so that you can always access it. I'm asking you, please share this, because people need to know what's going on here with our educators. They need to know what's going on in the city of Houston with the state of education. That's absolutely very, very important, because we are a standard bearer. People are looking at Houston from all over the country, and we want to make sure that we're putting our best face forward.
Absolutely.
Yes. But anyway, Rebecca, as we say every week, we can do it. See you next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.